Episode 2, Two Heads Are Better Than One, Why People Become Multiple. I'm trying something a little different this time. I've got Chris sitting in the room with me, and he's busily working away on a CAD project that he's doing. So, today's episode is about why people become multiple. Well, one problem with addressing that is that the world will probably never know. Every multiple probably has a different reason than every other multiple. Trying to categorize everybody as having the same experience to make them have the quote-unquote same phenomena happen to them is kind of bizarre. As far as I can tell, I mean, I probably know a good 100 multiples, maybe more, and a large chunk of them I even know face-to-face, in person, not online. Thank you, Chris. They've all got different perspectives on how they became multiple and why they are. Generally, it seems to happen at a really young age. So, studying children in the way that would be necessary to figure out exactly why every child could possibly become multiple would be probably inhumane. Since there's a huge suspicion for children becoming multiple under duress, with large amounts of stress or trauma, you can't bottle children up into an environment full of stress and see how many of them turn out to be multiple. So, scientifically speaking, we're not going to be having anyone doing lots of experiments and proving one theory or another about multiplicity. Another problem with it happening so young is that not everybody in the world has perfect memory of when they're a child, especially multiples. So even doing anecdotal evidence as to why it happened becomes very, very difficult. I lost a good chunk of my memories from the age of birth on till at least 7 years old. I have some memories of 7, less of 8, more of 9, you know, it goes back and forth depending on the flavor of that year. And I can't possibly tell you what my daily routines were like and so on. They just blend away into incomprehensible meshed mess that I can't decipher. So the fact that it happens very young definitely is going to confound anyone comparing notes as to why it happens. Another problem is, like I was just saying, you know, multiples have a hard time remembering their past. Not all multiples do, but a good chunk of them. It's one of the criteria for defining dissociative identity disorder. Another problem with it is that there's a lot of denial possible. I mean, who wants to remember if something horrible did happen to them? So you can't prove that nothing bad happened to you, because the very fact that you don't remember anything bad happening to you kind of enforces the theory of forgetting or being in denial. So while it's possible there are multiples out there who've never had a traumatic thing happen to them, it's impossible to prove it, because it's not like their parents are going to come out and say, hey, we did horrible things to you when you were a kid. There's this obscurity or oblivion in the history of a multiple. You can't get everybody to get their story straight, and who's going to tell the truth? So just because there's no evidence that nothing happened doesn't mean nothing did. And even when you think you have memories of something bad happening, that doesn't mean that it did as well. There's plenty of argument for that in the legal courts. Plenty of parents who've been put on the stand with people saying, you know, you're an evil person, you did these horrible things to someone, and them going, no, 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 their memory is broken, they don't remember a thing. It could go either way. There's no way to prove it one way or another when something happened 20 or 30 years ago. So, we're not going to have a definitive why people become multiple. What we do know about multiples and what their tendencies are as a group is that there is a high number of multiples who remember having been traumatized in one way or another, and a good number of them remember being traumatized repeatedly. The types of abuse that come from family settings or from people who see them frequently. There's a tendency among multiples to have a higher IQ. Not an absolute tendency. It's not to say every person that has a Mensa standing has to be multiple. It's more the other way around. For some reason, we use our brains differently and happen to do better on IQ tests. It also seems common among multiples to believe in the supernatural. Although, one could argue that those are just the multiples that I hang around with. I've seen in some of the multiple books written by multiples a general tendency to have some sort of spiritual or supernatural beliefs. Trudy Chase in When Rabbit Howls wrote many little things about psychic stuff going on, like affecting electrical appliances when she got stressed out and so on. There are other multiples in the community who have experiences where, you know, electronic gadgets just simply don't like them. And there are other multiples who have experiences where, obviously, electrical things really do like them. The list of supernatural beliefs just simply goes on from there. It's not just simply fidgeting with electronic gadgetry, but there's a lot of different things that people think they can do or experience. Okay, so far we have a really hard time saying why people become multiple because the world may never know. And we have some ideas about the tendencies that multiples have that we can pretty clearly demonstrate. But still, how does it happen? Do people have a choice? Or do they have no choice in becoming multiple? And that's a very, very good question. And I don't know why I asked it, because I don't really know the answer. I'm Ying too. Okay. That you're Ying? Oh no, I am Ying. Oh, I'm definitely Ying. I'm not going to explain what a Yi is, so I'll be deleting this. I'll be damned if I'm giving my explanation of a Yi.
Oh god.
Okay. So, we're going to set aside the question of why it happens, and we're going to address how it happens. Well, there's probably several ways it can happen. Some people might argue that it's involuntary, and some people might argue that it's voluntary. So, to investigate why somebody would choose to become multiple, we can look at the benefits of being multiple. One benefit is that you can access portions of your mind that it would seem that normal people can't. Portions of the subconscious come forward and act on your behalf, and you get to access different ways of thinking. Some are more primitive and geared towards survival, and others may be more sophisticated. Many multiples age shift. When you go through an enormous amount of stress when you're a child, you can age shift to somebody that is older, has a more sophisticated or more mature perspective, so that you can handle the situation as somebody with more experience, even though you yourself are still a child. There is at least a perception that multiples think fast. It may not be that we think fast so much as we think in multiple trains of thought at the same time. But there are definitely situations where that is of benefit to a person, where quick thinking or thinking in multiple chains can help foster survival. Another thing is that multiples tend to be very plastic. They tend to be very malleable. They can mold their personalities to fit situations they end up in. They can yank out resources and build new personalities. This may not go for all multiples, but for a great number of multiples that I've known, if a situation comes up and they aren't prepared for it, they can pull something out of their ass and handle it on the fly in ways that most other people would collapse, break down, have an anxiety attack, have a fit, and so on. My take on that is that I change my mind in a much more literal way than what people usually mean when they say that they change their mind. Being multiple is probably a very highly adaptive response to different stimuli. When something new happens, being able to change who you are or change your perspective on life very drastically can be of enormous benefit to you. Another thing that multiplicity can do is help you compartmentalize data, or compartmentalize your experiences. So, if you go into a certain situation and you know exactly what to expect in that situation, like you always go to the same house with the same people and the same things happen, now you can compartmentalize that so that it's entirely separate from your experiences outside of that situation. That's called state-dependent memory, but it's a survival trait. You know, when you're being chased by a tiger, back in the Aboriginal days, you know, when you were chased by a tiger, the best thing to do is to call up all your other experiences of being chased by a tiger so that you could call on the same resources you used the other times, and that would increase your chances of survival. The same thing goes for people who have been stressed. Even people who've never had a traumatic experience in their life before tend to phase out and go into a different mind state while they're in the traumatic experience. This would be seen, you know, after September 11th, for instance. People were in a daze while things were happening. It's not uncommon for stress victims to compartmentalize their experiences. And being a multiple also gives an added layer of protection. Multiples that have gone through a great deal of stresses and traumas and so on end up being very layered. They get an onion effect where they have outside layers and inner layers, and as you keep digging down and down and down, you never quite find the middle. You know, if you keep digging into an onion, you just find smaller pieces of onion. You never really quite get to the middle, and the middle is no more special than the rest. Still smelly piece of shit, but but multiples can also end up with a layering effect. Not all of them have it, but I call this being subsystems, where you have an encapsulating system around a smaller or more precious system, or a more fundamental system that's more and more towards the core of the individual. There can be many layers. This allows armoring or distancing from outside influences. The more vulnerable portions of the multiple will tend to be further in, so that the tougher portions are on the outside taking the daily stresses, and the inside ones never have to actually come out. Another benefit of multiplicity is that there's never a dull moment. Children who may have been abandoned or neglected may also end up becoming multiple, because that in and of itself is a very frightening experience for a child and can be very traumatic, as well as it giving them the eternal, you know, invisible playmates that they would need because they were probably bored to death. There's a saying to investigate at some point. Bored to death. I gotta make a mental note of that one. Another benefit of multiplicity is it's always easy to get a second opinion. It's right there at your fingertips. This kind of goes along with the multiple threads and thinking faster. When you're alone, you're the only person that is the victim of something happening to you, and you have nobody to turn to ask about what's going on or get a reality check from them. You know, is this bad? Are they supposed to be doing this to me? Well, you have another portion of your head that goes, yeah, this is bad. They're not supposed to be doing this to me. So those are some of the benefits of being multiple. So somebody in certain types of situations as they're growing up may opt for multiplicity because there are all these benefits. That is to say that it's a choice. Not everybody thinks it is a choice. There are people who feel as though they were invaded, you know, very much like spirit possession or demonic possession is depicted in many religions, where it is an involuntary act. Something invades you, comes into you, takes up residence, and now you gotta try and kick it out, or whatever. There are people who definitely feel that this is not something they chose. There's also people who are on the other side of it. We call them walk-ins, where their body was going about its business one day with the birth spirit, the person that belonged in it, wandering around and doing their thing, and something happened, and their spirit left. So now this body is abandoned, and suddenly another spirit is shoved into the body. You know, when there's a vacuum, something fills it. Well, in this case, you know, the leave-taking of one spirit leaves an empty vessel, an empty body, and another spirit comes along and possesses the body. Now, all of a sudden, this person is waking up in a new body. They don't have the memories of the body. They don't own that life. They don't own the body. The body isn't theirs. And quite often, a walk-in is alone. There's nobody else in their head. They're not really a multiple. The experience for this in psychiatric literature is dissociative. Oh, there it goes. Gone. The experience that somebody has when this happens is called a fugue. There we go. It's a dissociative fugue. From the psychiatric literature's point of view, the person suddenly shifts personalities and is now someone else to, you know, to their opinion anyway, and they take flight, they run away. That's how, why it's called a fugue. The fugue is the running away part. The dissociation part is the part where you lose contact with all reality and you lose contact with yourself. The person shifts personalities, runs away, often takes up another identity in a new place, no longer contacts their old family, and so on. Some people recover from it, you know, and it's an episode of a dissociative fugue. And then, of course, there's probably other people who switch personalities, run away, and never come back, successfully change their name or take up a job somewhere else and are never found. Some of these instances can be linked to a trauma. This usually happens in somebody's adulthood rather than childhood. And it very closely parallels what I've heard from these people we call walk-ins, where their perspective is, here I was on my home planet, everything was wonderful and fine and good, and then slam, I was in another body. I was on Earth. And I had no bloody idea what I was doing here. So that's one instance of it being involuntary. There's others. There's as many opinions about how things happen as there are people. So having addressed some of the benefits of multiplicity and why people would choose to become them, I have to also address some of the drawbacks of multiplicity and why it becomes a problem. You know, at some point, obviously it was a good thing for the multiple to become multiple. They needed it for some reason or another, or this other person slammed into their body and now they're, you know, someone else, and it was a good thing. For whatever reason it happened and it's over and it's done with, and now they have to cope. And life changes. You know, when you're a victim of childhood abuse, eventually you're not a child anymore, and hopefully you learn how not to be abused anymore. All of this wonderful things that we learned that got us through childhood, who, you know, helped us become adults, sometimes become obstacles. The same things that are benefits of multiplicity can have their flip side of the coin drawbacks. The amusing one that I came up with earlier was, know thyself becomes a full-time career. You can't stop delving the hidden corners of your mind or meeting the new people in your head or figuring out what makes you tick, because there's just so many of you to figure out how you tick. Another problem is you have a tendency to misplace things, be they physical objects or events in your life and memories. It's almost constant for me. I know that tomorrow I'm not going to work, and the next day I'm going to forget what I did at work today. I'm going to go into work, I'm going to sit down in front of my computer, I'm going to go, oh yeah, I was writing a program, wasn't I? Who was writing this program? Shit, I don't remember PHP to save my life. I was writing a PHP program 2 days ago. Now I have to learn PHP all over again. I'm going to look at my own code and go, thank God whoever it was commented this shit. And that's just, you know, 2 days, and I'm going to have problems. So yeah, you have a problem. It's possible I'll sit in front of the computer, and because I'm sitting in front of the same computer and I'm looking at the same program, the right person will be out and they'll go, oh yeah, I remember everything. And just go on, you know, finishing up what they were working on and straightening out all the commenting and making sure it's even more clear so that the next time this happens, we won't be sitting there going, oh, fuck, I don't remember a damn thing. But it's quite likely that we're going to sit down in front of that computer and blink 10 times and not have a clue and try clicking our heels, you know, and saying there's no place like home and unfortunately the fairy doesn't come and take us away. So, then there's the, did I do that? Well, it's very similar to what I was just saying, where I'm going to sit in front of that computer and look at that code. I'm going to go, did I write that? You know, I do this at on my website. Every time I go on my website, I look at a long, beautiful page of prose explaining multiplicity in detail and going on and on and how intellectual it is and how strongly backed it is and how, you know, there's a footnote or whatever and it's very clearly written and I go, oh my God, I think I wrote that. So yeah, there's the, did I do that? Which is closely paralleled by losing time. I didn't actually lose the time at the time, but I lost the time somewhere since. I didn't lose it that day. I didn't lose it that week. That week I probably could have told you what I did that day. But somewhere along the line, a month later, somewhere else, it just slipped away, fell into a corner of my head where I can't find it anymore. So, I write down a lot of stuff. I make lots and lots of lists and notes, and at work I keep notebooks full of what I did that day because I know I'm not going to remember. Another drawback of multiplicity is coming to a consensus. If you have only two people in your head, I guarantee those two people have very, very vastly different opinions on nearly everything. And you know, one's going to prefer night, the other's going to prefer day. One likes to sleep, the other one wants to be awake. One likes meat, the other one's a vegan. It's just the way it's going to be, you know. There's going to be very drastic, maybe not quite that drastic, but very drastic differences between them. And coming to a consensus is going to be a problem. Because when there's two, you can't outvote the other one. So, and if there's three, I'll bet there's one that abstains from everything. And the other two argue all the time. So, anyway, there's a lot of questions people tend to ask me about how we get along. I got asked that in an email privately today. You know, what do we do when we argue, disagree, and so on, and the short answer is we try not to bother. We know we have differences of opinion. There's some 70-ish of us, probably 20 or so, who really give a hoot about what's going on at any given moment. And that makes for very busy discussions if we have to bother discussing everything that's going on. Like, if we have to discuss what type of flavor of gum we want to chew, that's just going a little overboard. Whoever is front chooses the trivial things. If we're at a restaurant and they want to order whatever, they can order whatever, preferably only if they're going to be out to eat it. But even if they're not out to eat it, you know, they ordered when they were out, we'll deal. We'll eat what's in front of us. This can sometimes be a problem when the carnivore orders and the herbivore ends up sitting at the table and trying to chow down on this nice raw steak that they just got. But it's not something that we need to make, like, a big deal out of. We don't have any particular desire to get into fights and arguments over what we're going to eat for dinner. That's stupid. What we do have trouble with is things that really drastically alter our life or that will affect other people in our head. Where are we going to live? What job are we going to have? How are we going to raise the children? Who are we going to live with? How are we paying the bills? These are things that we're much more likely to get into an argument over, but also these are items that require thought, patience, research, and decision making for everybody, regardless of how many people they have in their head. So in our case, it's more like we have to sit down and vote and have a group discussion and whatever, but it's not something that needs, you know, a snap decision. It's not something that we have to decide all in 5 minutes. We just stumble around, make mistakes, and do our damnedest to not make them again. If we piss off other people in our head, then they're pissed off, and we deal with that. You know, we apologize, we try and discuss what went wrong, try and come up with a better plan for next time. It's just not something to get too stressy about for us. Other multiples get very stressed about it. On the scale of things, I'm definitely towards the much more calm and peaceful system than most people are. I know people that have to argue about what side of the bed to get up on in the morning. Do we want to get up on the right side of the bed or the wrong side of the bed? Well, I don't know. You know? So, that's my babble about consensus today. Okay. Another drawback of multiplicity is you get a bunch of people in one head that have, gone through a lot in their life, gone through abuse or trauma or whatever, and they're going to have anxiety. Because whatever it is, especially if it happened more than once, haunts them. There's going to be eccentricities. You know, do you sleep with the light on or the light off? There's going to be other disturbances in their life based on the anxiety, like the inability to sleep. Insomnia tends to be a common symptom of multiplicity. And I'll tell you, boy, my problem with sleep isn't so much anxiety about sleeping. Although I did have people do things to me that left their marks on me and caused triggers from when I was asleep. That's not my problem. But for other multiples, that's a problem. People did things to them when they were asleep or woke them up out of sleep to do things to them and so on. So sleeping itself can be the problem. In my case, there's so many people in my head and so many things to do and only so much time in a day. And ever since childhood, we have resented the need to sleep because it steals time that we could be using to do other things. I mean, ever since the age of, like, I don't know, probably 8 or 9 years old, you know, we had an agenda. Every day is an agenda. It's not,